This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Happy Leap Day, everybody. This is episode number 49 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And Hallie was not able to join us tonight. She is currently on a flight home from GP Houston. But we managed to find a very good friend of ours who was free tonight. You might know her as last week's Woman of Excellence. And she's also the star of Drafting with Morgan on GatheringMagic.com. She is our friend Morgan Wentworth. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're all big fans of yours. We think you're delightful.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I've been a big fan of The Girlfriend Bracket since I found it when I started working for Gathering Magic. So it's nice to be here.
Yeah, the timing on that was really neat. Like, I remember, I think you might have sent us a listener question before you started your videos.
Yeah, it was around the same time.
Yeah, because I remember we got the question from you, and I knew you, I met you, I think, at GP Minneapolis a year or two ago.
Yeah, way back when.
I mistook you for one of the Magic the Amateuring girls.
Yeah, it happens a lot more frequently than you'd expect.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember I didn't know what they looked like at the time, and so I remember going to Minneapolis and thinking, oh, God, I can't wait to meet Maria and Megan, and your voice sounds very similar to theirs, and you have the very bubbly personality, and so I heard your voice from a bit of a ways away, and I remember going up to you and going, Maria? And you're like, no. And I'm like, Megan. And you're like, no. And I'm like, oh, who the hell are you? And you were like, I'm Morgan.
It doesn't help that we all have M names, and yeah, we're all from Minneapolis,
right?
And we all love magic. it gets very confusing.
Oh, I'm sure. And so you were like, I'm Morgan, and I do some streaming with the Meadery, and I'm awesome too, and you were awesome. And then I remember getting the listener question from you, and then shortly after you started making your own content, and I was like, I'm so glad that you took the plunge into that.
Yeah, it's been a pretty long road. I feel like I'm finally getting a rhythm together. Mm-hmm. And actually, that's what made me gather up the courage to send in a listener question, because I felt like I needed to be a little bit more outgoing. And mm-hmm. So I had a question, and I wanted it answered.
Yeah. And you seem like you're doing quite well. 1,600 followers or on YouTube, subscribers?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot more than I really expected starting out.
Oh, man. Yeah, I think that's so fascinating. You know, I don't know much about that side of content creation, so I'm so curious about, like, what kind of goes on behind the scenes, and we can certainly talk about that a little later if we want to. But for people who don't know who you are, if they happen to live in a cave and they have no idea who Morgan Wentworth is, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm probably best known for Drafting with Morgan on GatheringMagic.com. That's by far the most views I get on any of my videos. I also have my own personal YouTube channel where I try and put up a draft video every weekday, and that got really stressful with school, so it kind of fell off, but now I'm picking it back up again, and I still put up a lot of content. So you might see me streaming on Twitch sometimes. I do that quite a bit, and I also judge, so that's where most people will recognize me from, either in the Minneapolis area, or if you go to a GP and go to the prize wall and there's this crazy girl trying to offer you Ice Age packs, that's me.
Now, you're primarily a limited player, yeah?
Yes. I really like drafting, and I really started picking it up around Cons of Tarkir.
When did you start playing Magic?
I started playing Magic back when Lorwyn had come out. I remember getting starter decks with my brother and just messing around with the cards. And I started playing FNM around Innistrad. And I delineate the two because FNM was when I started actually learning the rules of the game.
Mm. Yeah, I look at Magic similar to that, too. It's like, you know, I've technically been playing since Ice Age. Like, I started in 7th grade, but I like to say that I actually started playing, like, you know, quotation marks with my fingers, around Innistrad as well, because, you know, I was older. I was 30. I had money. I had a job. I had the ability to travel. I knew what events were. And back when Ice Age was going on, I was a teenager. I was using babysitting money. I had no idea what a PTQ was. And so, you know, I don't really count that as really playing. So I definitely understand that.
Yeah, my first deck was a bunch of cards thrown together and their colors matched, and that was about it.
One of the things we like to ask our guests whenever they come on the show is, what has your experience been like as a female Magic player?
I consider myself to be pretty lucky. Minneapolis has a very inclusive Magic community, and so all of the stores that I go to are very welcoming, especially since I've become a judge and, you know, interacted with more people. I try to be a good ambassador to other women in the community because I work at a store too, and you get a lot of really shy women who have no clue what's going on but want to play. And in addition to that, I have a lot of really good friends in the Magic community, men as well as women, and I try to engage in conversations about my position and the position of women in the Magic community with them as much as I can.
Yeah, we've had several conversations, you know, privately, and I don't know if you want to talk about them publicly or not, but I know you also made a video recently, and it does seem like the issue is very important to you, and so I think it's really great that you spoke up about how you felt, because I understand it was a little nerve-wracking for you. Like, you'd released a video, and you were like, man, that was really stressful, and I was really proud of you for overcoming that and for speaking your truth.
Yeah, it was a video that I think was a long time coming, but I really didn't have the emotional state to put it out, and then it kind of fell into a line where I spent a lot of time thinking about women in the community, and it actually probably should have come out back when Wizards of the Coast switched around their content production a lot and put like Gabby and Megan and Maria on staff, and I think that some of the reactions were misplaced and focusing way too much on the gender of the content producers rather than the quality of the content they've been consistently putting out for a while. So that's one of the main things that I wanted to express in that video.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I think all three of them, and you can even count MTA as one entity, you know, I think it's fair to say that they're killing it regardless. You know, the MTA girls are about to hit 6,000 followers on Twitter. They are consistently, I think they had like 70 positive reviews on iTunes. Not that I check or anything, you know. you know, they're consistently in like one of the top 10 shows. They're right up there with shows like Limited Resources. You know, they're probably one of the best shows out right now, and the most popular. And Gabby with her 20,000 followers, you know, her successful stream, she always has 200 plus people watching her, it feels like, you know. So, you know, those are people that I definitely didn't need to be convinced were awesome, but I can see some people who either didn't know those things or who needed to be kind of reminded of that these are people that have been doing excellent things and they just happen to be women.
Yeah, exactly.
So speaking of women who are doing excellent things, our woman of excellence this week is a streamer known as Shamehe. I know her as M, but I guess either one goes. It's just a fun name to say, like Shamehe, or like, hey, hey. I mean, it's just great. You can do it any way you want. We actually received a nomination for Shamehe, and the person who nominated her said this. They said, M is the quintessential example of a positive force in the MTG Twitch community. Her stream is really is unlike any other. In M's stream, you know that you'll be welcomed by the loving community that she has cultivated over the last year. I can't think of another stream where everyone knows each other's usernames. Basically, the Twitch version of the classic TV show Cheers. It's like she really has created her own little plane. Most streams, especially Magic streams, are about the broadcaster playing a game and the viewers watching it, but not hers. Everything she does is a community experience. You go into her chat and you feel like you're the one playing. Everyone is in the game together, if that makes sense. She's always kind, respectful, optimistic, and most importantly, loves Magic straight to death. She always brings positive energy and a welcoming presence wherever she goes, and the community is better for having her in it. So we want to nominate her, and if you want to support her, you can find her on Twitter at Shamehe, Shemehay, and at twitch.tv/Shamehe, spelled the same way as well. This past weekend, I believe we all did a little something with Magic, but Morgan, you being our guest, we're going to go ahead and start off with you. You judged an RPTQ, yeah?
Yep, that's right.
And you said there were some spicy brews.
Yeah, there were a couple of them. First was my one true standard love right now, Bant Collected Company. But this one kind of stood out to me because it didn't have any Jace Vryn's Prodigy in it.
Wow.
Yeah, and I thought that was a really cool thing to do, especially since it top fored. This guy qualified for the PT with a deck that didn't have Jace Vryn's Prodigy, which is widely acknowledged as, you know, the best card in Standard, and one of the barriers that I think some people will face when they try and build a deck. So that this version did as well as it did without Jace is something that I thought was really cool.
Yeah. And were there any other decks that impressed you?
Yeah. There's the Grixis Dragons deck that I was telling you about before we started recording. And there were actually a couple of Dragons decks, but this one was straight Grixis, black, red, and blue, just like Dominaria intended, with Jace and Silumgar the Drifting Death. It's pretty old school, but it mixed Silumgar the Drifting Death with Kolgan the Storm's Fury. So basically, when you attacked, you could probably just wipe your opponent's board with or without the additional help of Chandra.
I like the sound of that.
It did really well, too. It also top four'd.
Oh, nice. Do you think that, you know, we've talked, I mean, I played Esper Dragons back in Oakland, and I feel like Esper Dragons is not very good right now. You know, I've heard some people, I know Shaheen Serrani did well with it in Houston, which we'll talk about, and, you know, some people still insist that, you know, Crackling Doom is on a downswing and it's safe for Esper Dragons, but I don't feel that it is. Do you feel that Grixis Dragons might be a good replacement for Esper? Like, it's better in this meta?
I think so. Grixis has more efficient sweepers like Radiant Flames, as well as a lot more threats. Where Esper Dragons only had Dragonlord Ojutai, Grixis Dragons has Thunderbreak Regent, along with Kolgan the Storm's Fury, and Kalidus.
Hmm. I have yet to actually use Kalidus myself, but it sounds like it's fun if you can get it going.
Yeah, definitely. In decks like Grixis Dragons, it's really easy to play Kalidus on turn 5 and Murderous Cut your opponent's main creature. So you get value out of it right away.
Oh, man. I'm going to have to try that then. And Hallie, Katie, you had friends that were at the RPTQ, yeah?
I did. Brooke went.
Okay.
He went 4-0-2 and got to draw into the top 8 with no losses. And then in the top 8, he lost his first round. So he unfortunately did not queue for the PT, but he said in the top 8 there was only the 3 big decks. There was Mardu Green, Rally, and Bant Coco. And he said that overall the field was 75% those decks, and then he said there was one or two copies each of Red Black Dragons, Grixis, Esper Dragons, and the red deck. And he played Mardu Green. He played 2 Chandra, which is kind of unusual, but seemed to be good for him, and he was still playing the Soul Fires, which a lot of people have cut. But it seemed like every time he texted me and Kobe, because we're all in this group text message, he'd be like, just beat another Rally deck. Just beat another Rally deck. And I was like, I need to play whatever you're playing, because I don't want to lose to Rally. But he had a good time, and I was proud of him. He's bummed that the next RPTQ is sealed, because he really hates sealed with a big passion, but he's gonna have to figure it out. So
speaking of Rally, our friend Emma Handy had she played at SCG Philadelphia, which we'll talk about, and she had mentioned that she's obviously a diehard Rally player, and she had said that in order to sort of spruce up the matchup against Bant Coco, she was boarding in Languishes. And she made it sound like she was having a really good time doing that. So if you're, you know, if you're a Rally player and you don't quite know what to do, because it sounds like Rally was having a difficult time against Bant Coco, you might want to bring in some board wipes and kind of shake things up a little bit.
Cool.
Chris and I, we played in a Modern GPT this past weekend, and I think we did pretty well. Chris, why don't you go first and tell everybody how you did?
All right. We went to the event thinking it was just a 1K, so it was a pleasant surprise that it was a GPT. We were like, oh, okay, cool.
I thought it was an IQ. I didn't even know where I was at until, like, the last round. And
yeah, same. Because I was trying not to pay any attention at all. I decided to go with Mono Blue Tron because it's the deck I've been piloting for the longest time now, and it felt unsafe for me to bring my red, white, and blurn deck that I've been working on. So my first round opponent was on Bringing Gifts. I never saw the Bring to Light, so I'm not quite sure what was going on there.
Did he bring a gifts receipt? See what I did there?
So the first game, I was able to beat him. The second game went on for a very very, very long time. We ended up drawing. He had an Iona on board, naming Blue, and he had locked me out with Stony Silence from being able to use my maps, activate any other artifacts like Oblivion Stone. So we kind of just went back and forth and back and forth for a little while. And after a bit, I realized, well, I can't beat him in turns. I know he can't win, so we're just going to draw this out. But he seemed like a really sweet guy. I was sad I didn't really get to see his deck perform very much other than that, but I was just happy that I won. Then I went on to face Red-Green Eldrazi. I ended up getting swept by them. However, the first game, it felt like I was denying him enough threats that he took a long time to get on board, which I liked. And I was like, okay, well, if I can try to do this more consistently versus Eldrazi, then maybe I can still have a chance. I did change up some things in the deck. I took out some of my previous win conditions and decided to go all in on Thought Not Seer, which did major work. But there's nothing quite so shitty as playing a Thought Not Seer and having your opponent reveal their hand to see that they have not one, but three Worldbreakers.
Oh my.
Yes, and Akoa's Elixir turn, it's like, I don't even know what to do right now. He you know, would ghost quarter my Tron lands, and I was like, okay, whatever, you know, we can still try to get there. So I tried to fight as valiantly as I could, but unfortunately, I just couldn't get there. So I ended up losing to him. I went on to face an American Control deck that, for whatever reason, I just, like, crushed, like, hardcore. Like, I was waiting for, you know, a Snapcaster, Bolt You, do all these other things, and it just never seemed to really get there, unfortunately. The first game, I just beat him down with my threats, and then the second game, I was able to Slaver Lock him. After our last game, he says to me sarcastically, "It was almost fun playing you."
And shade.
I know. It's like, I know that feel, man. Like, I've been there. So I ended up beating him. And then I went on to face my friend Chris McHenry, who was playing a Malira combo. And I just got decimated. I need to really get some more practice versus that deck. Unfortunately, the version that he's running, and fortunately for him, he has many contingency plans. So if they try to take away any of his combo, he's like, well, then I'll just do this. And I have, you know, other threats so that there are ways for me to, you know, get around having everything kind of screwed up for me. So I gotta get a little more practice in with that. Plus, Kitchen Finks and Murder Shark Cap are hard things for me to wrap my head around. Maybe it's just me. Then I went on to play Mono Green Stompy. I ended up beating him out of three. Game one, I was able to top deck a Power Plant to get Tron online and play a Platinum Angel, to which he grabbed his deck box, looked through his sideboard, and conceded to me. So I was like, okay, we've got to have some artifact hate or something going on there.
Beast Within, at least.
Well, and that's what I was expecting him to board in, but if he had it, I never saw it. And so then the second game, he just got there quicker than I could, which, you know, is definitely a possibility with that deck. And then the third game, I was able to just deny him a lot of things. Thought Not Seer just did major work, like ripping essential things out of his hand. Chalice on one, still a boss. And it was just delightful to go ahead and get Slaver Lock and have him just concede as I was activating my Mind Slaver. But the salt was real, unfortunately, because he did not seem very happy. Then the last round, I had to play Norrin Sisters. And I was like, I have, like, no experience playing against this version of the deck. And, like, we were already, like, maybe, like, 5 or so odd minutes into the game, and I was like, I really have to go to the bathroom. This is going to be a bit. So I asked the judge for a time extension, used the restroom, kind of got my head back in the game, and then came back, and we just, I don't even know. I think he caught up to, like, 30-plus life. I think he even lost, count of where the hell he was at. But we ended up going 1-1 draw. And at the end of it, I was just like, I'm so glad this is the last round that I have to play, because my brain was just, like, exploding. By the last game, he couldn't kill me because he would have to be able to do damage with Norrin, and Norrin can't attack. So he was like, if only I could attack with Norrin. And I'm just like, So that was pretty good. And Chalice on 1 did work there, too. So at the end of it all, I ended up getting 11th place to it, you know, much to my surprise. And I was like, this is what it's like to have nice things. Like, I didn't, like I didn't even know. And I said to Aaron on the way home, I'm like, it's like that episode of The Simpsons, you know, where Bart's like, you know, stretching his neck up high because they've never been able to do that before. And I was like, this is how I feel. And I was just like, nothing can take me down for, like, the rest of the night. And I was like, super stoked about doing well. And I was really proud of everyone that I went down there with. And I had a good time. And Pastimes was a really good venue to actually play at, because I haven't actually ever played there before, so that was really cool, and I'm just looking forward to going to Detroit and see what my deck can do.
Yeah, I hadn't been to Pastimes in years, and I was pleasantly surprised to see that they had opened up the space a little bit. Like, it felt like the room could breathe, as cliche as that sounds. And I was also surprised by the fact that they had feminine hygiene products in the bathroom.
Nice.
In the basket. Awesome. So, like, if you were there, they had your choice of, if you're a pad girl, they had some pads. If you're a tampon girl, they had tampons just free in a cute little basket. And I was like, now see, this is service with a smile. This is great. And I tweeted a picture of it, and I was like, this is fabulous. So if any other LGSs are listening, that's not a bad thing. Like, we don't mind seeing that. So, so yeah, we did go to Pastimes. I had no idea what I was playing in. I was playing Ad Nauseam, because I had the most experience with it, and that's sort of my deck lately. And I knew that I was finally going to break my cycle of never facing Eldrazi, because as I've said, I had yet to really face the Eldrazi menace. And even at FNM the night before, I went 5-0 and didn't face it. And I was just like, am I ever going to fight this deck? Like, what's going on? So we start off the day. My first round opponent was playing Jeskai Ascendancy, and really sweet guy, but like, I feel like he didn't have a lot of experience with the deck, because as he was trying to go off, he was not doing a very good job communicating his +1/+1 bonuses and things like that. And so there were definitely some moments where I was like, okay, I need to know what's going on here. Like, you've got a lot going on, and I'm happy to, if it's going to lead to you winning, I'm fine with that, but I want to follow you as you go there, because otherwise you might try to confuse me. And so there were some awkward moments in the beginning where he was like, well, I don't understand. And I was like, I'm not trying to be a jerk here. I was like, I just need you to communicate this better, because this carry added has this many bonuses, and this Fate Stitcher has this many, but you don't have any dice here, and you're just sort of, you know what I mean? Like, I just needed some clarity. And so I did end up calling a judge at one point, and the judge agreed with me that, you know, you have all these dice here. Could you maybe put a dice on your Fate Stitcher? Could you put a dice on your carry added just so she can follow along with you? And once that was done, we had a really good game, and I did end up beating him. I did face Eldrazi twice during the day. I faced blue, white, and green, red, and beat it both times.
Nice.
What Eldrazi menace? What? So I did really well against them. I mean, it was a race. It wasn't like an easy matchup, but it wasn't as bad as, say, my Infect matchup, where I don't even bother. Like, I at least felt like I had a 50-50 shot, so I felt really good about that. I did beat Affinity. That felt really good. I lost to Elves. That had some really quick draws. And so I was 4-1 going into round 6, and apparently I could draw in. So when I went to face my round 6 opponent, he extends his hand and goes, good game? And I'm like, I'm not math girl, so I'm like... So I'm like, is this going to work? I was like, are you sure we're in? He's like, we're in. And I'm like, all right, if we're not in, I'm going to come find you. So we sign the slip, and I take the 15 minutes to sort of prep myself for this. It's like, holy shit, top 8, holy shit. And kind of psych myself up for this. They announced the top 8. I was number 6, so I was clearly in. And then I have this really bad habit of making top 8 at something, and then the first person I face is the person who beat me before. Mm. So sure as shit, my first opponent was the Elves guy.
And naturally. So I'm just like, yeah.
Right. So I was like, God damn it. But I ended up winning. Nice. He had a mulligan, and then I won with a really timely echoing truth. He had a mulligan to 5 or 6 in game 3 or game 2. I beat him in 2. And he had 3 Nettle Sentinels. And so when he went to swing in for the kill, I was like, Echoing Truth, Naming Devil Sentinel. And so all three copies were returned to his hand, and then that bought me enough time to untap and then go off. So I beat Elves, moved on to the semifinals, and then I faced Blue-White Control, ended up beating him, and then I had to face Green-Red Eldrazi, which is an odd variation of Eldrazi. Like, I'm not shitting on it or anything. It just doesn't seem... It just reminds me a lot of, like, standard Eldrazi. Like, there's World Breakers and things like that. I don't know how it does in the mirror. But I was very surprised to see a lot of the cards that I saw. And I think I took him to 3. And, you know, he beat me by getting around Phyrexian Unlife. So if you're playing with Lightning Bolts, like, if I'm at 1 with Phyrexian Unlife and you swing, you're just going to take me to a negative. But if you bolt me first, I go to the negatives, and then you swing, and then I'm dead. So he understood how that worked, and so he beat me. The good news is that the top 4 agreed to split the money, so I still went home with $200.
Sweet.
Congratulations.
In cash. I had never seen one of the new $100 bills before, and I'm just like, holy shit. I'm, like, holding up to the light and stuff, you know? Mary Jefferson's moment, like Chris said in her tweet, you know, we're both kind of moving up, you know? So I had a lot of fun. I finished 2nd. There were 48 people, and I felt really good, and that combined with the 5-0 at FNM, I feel really ready for GP Detroit. So I'm ready for Eldrazi. Fucking bring it. As I didn't face any Infect, which felt really good. But otherwise, everything else, give me Affinity, give me Tron, give me Elves, give me Burn. I'm ready. I'm very ready.
Cool.
So the one thing I do want to change, though, about the deck is there were a couple times where I lost to Eldrazi because I had accidentally drawn my, or I unintentionally drew my win condition. And then they thought not seared it. And there was my win condition. So I was like, well, next game. So I think I either need to put an additional copy of Lightning Storm in my main, or maybe like a Lightning Storm and a Conflagrate, or a Lightning Storm and a Laboratory Maniac. But if I'm going to be facing Eldrazi decks all day, I can't run the risk of drawing my one win condition and not having a way to win the game. So I'm trying to find a way to work around that. But that was the only thing I'd really change about the deck, was just adding another win condition. So GP Houston was this weekend. It was standard, and Hardened Scales was the breakout deck. I feel like I've seen this deck kind of like on the fringe, but it really feels like this was sort of the busting out of the deck. And so just a reminder for some people. So it's a green-white deck, and it plays cards like Hardened Scales, Mana Gorger Hydra, Abzan Falconer, Endless One, Hangerback Walker, Avatar of the Resolute, and Servant of the Scale. There were 2 copies of it in the top 8. You know, Morgan, Katie, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think that Abzan Falconer especially is really well positioned right now, because when you try and beat the Collected Company decks, you go to Mantis Rider and Thunderbreak Regent and Wingmate Rock, things that fly. So giving your whole team flying is very effective. And Nissa, Voice of Zendikar, has been kind of creeping into standard recently. Like, last week there was the mono-red deck that sided into some forests and some Nissas, and this week they just used that as their main game plan, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah. I'd heard that the people were saying that the deck can kill you on turn 4.
Oh.
Which I think is possible.
That's nice. I was like, what? Where did this come from? Like, I just didn't understand, because it really wasn't a thing. And then it also made top 8 of the Star City, and I was just like, what? I guess I missed a memo on the Hardened.
It sounds like it was coming through. It sounds like the pros were the ones who came up with it. Like, it sounds like it was sort of like they all kind of kept it quiet. And I think LSV had tweeted randomly, like, I need so many Abzan Falconers. And he was like, I'm not kidding. Like, I really do. And I remember going, what could he possibly? And I'm thinking it's something like maybe a trolling thing, or like some sort of prank or whatever. I didn't think he was actually going to be using them, or that he was going to be getting them for other people to use. I was like, what? And then even when Morgan said it just now, she said, Abzan Falconer is well positioned. And I was like, look at God. Like, I never thought we would hear that phrase, you know? So do you think that this is sort of just a flash in the pan, or do you think that this deck has legs?
It kind of feels like green-white ramp back in old standard, when there was the green-white ramp mirror that went on for 2.5 hours in an untimed round, where it was made specifically to combat a certain meta game. And in this case, it's Mardu Green and Collected Company decks. And it'll probably go away just because it doesn't feel... Well, maybe in my opinion, it doesn't feel right that it's a bunch of stuff that I would play in a draft is making it to the top 8.
I played Living End for a year, and that was full of nothing but draft remains.
I was just going to say, I just love Servant of the Scale, and I'm glad that people are playing that card, because I thought it would be, you know, a cool card, and, you know, it's fine. It's found a little home, along with the Mana Gorger Hydra, who Chris Preston likes to refer to as, like, the ultimate, like, noob card. It's like, they all, like, crush on it hardcore, like, it's just everything you could want, and so, I don't know, I'm considering putting together Mark Jacobson's list just to give it a little spin.
It seems affordable, too.
How do they beat creatures? I don't understand.
Like, be bigger than them?
It just scares me when decks don't have, like, removal spells in them, because I tend to play decks that rely on them a lot. So when I see I guess they have Dromoka's Command, that's cool. But
Dromoka's Command is totally a removal spell most of the time.
It is, but it's just, I don't know, it doesn't feel safe to me. It doesn't feel like home.
I mean, just from looking at all of these cards, I think the removal is simply being bigger or just pushing through. It's like, you know, so the Abzan Falconer is giving these things flying, so you're hoping to evade, you know, anything happening on the ground. Mana Gorger has Trample, Avatar has Trample. Nissa gives things counters. It just sounds like you're really just trying to break through whatever they might have. That's your removal.
Mm.
Yeah. This was also Gabby Spartz's first time in the coverage booth. Did you guys get a chance to see her in action?
Yes.
Yes.
She killed it.
She did. She was great.
She was great. And I love that she said she needed a booster seat because she was so little. And she really is. She's this little tiny thing. And then she took a couple of pictures next to Marshall and next to LSV. And I think we all kind of knew she would do really well. And it seemed like she was really well received. And so I'm really happy for her. She will actually be doing coverage at Detroit this weekend, too. So if you're going to GP Detroit like Chris and I are, be sure to say hello to her.
That's really exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, Twitch chat was still Twitch chat, but I mean, for the most part, they were like, and not even like clever, too. Like, I'm not saying it's ever okay to say some of these things, but like some of them were, they weren't even trying. Like, I remember one conversation that was, she was commentating a match and she had mentioned she had used the abbreviation for defense as like D. And so she was like, you know, oh, so Owen's going on the D here. And then some idiot in Twitch was like, I'm going to put her on the D. And I'm like, oh, come on. I'm like, that is not even original. Like, ugh.
Yeah. I was kind of jumping in there, like, toward the end of the GP, being like, you know, Gabby's awesome, you know, go Gabby. And then at one point, someone was like, who is this girl, and does she know how to play Magic? And I typed in, I was like, lol, do some research. Like, are you kidding me? But I was happy that, like, those comments were there for, like, exactly, like, maybe a second, and then they were gone. So, yeah, I was very appreciative of that, and the majority of the chat was, like, being like, yeah, Gabby's the shit. Take note. So I like.
Yeah, the time that I spent in the chat, most of the comments that I saw was just genuine curiosity about her. We're like, who is she? Where is her accent from? They genuinely had never heard of her. And so it was really nice to see people sort of get an education on who she was, because I feel like, you know, she did well enough where she made people want to know more about her. And and I thought she did really well. So hopefully we see more of her and she keeps it going.
Hell yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
SCG Philadelphia was also this past weekend. That was a Legacy Open, and this was the event that Eldrazi kind of made their Legacy debut in. There were 9 copies of Colorless Eldrazi that made day 2. If you combine all of the variations of Delver, Delver was actually the most played deck, but Colorless Eldrazi, if we break up all the different kinds of Delver, it was the most popular deck in day 2. It didn't seem to take over Legacy like it did in Modern, but it definitely made an impact among the people who were watching it. You know, do you guys think that it's going to take over Legacy like it has Modern, or do you think that Legacy has the tools to deal with it?
I think that Legacy is more prone to being disrupted easily because you have all of these deeply ingrained decks. So a new angle is going to shake things up quite a bit, but it can also bounce back pretty easily.
Yeah, the decks are so powerful that, I mean, maybe it'll get through a couple tournaments or something, but when you're doing just unfair things in every single deck, I mean, I think every deck still has a place.
Yeah, I think when you look at, like, the totem pole of, like, unfair things you can do in Legacy, it's like, ooh, you're going to cheat out some Eldrazi. You know? Like, mm-hmm. you know, you can play Doomsday and, like, exile your whole deck. You can play Dredge and turn your deck over. You can play, you know, Enchantress, which actually, three copies of Enchantress on day two. That made my heart sing. Because what's better against Eldrazi than Elephant Grass? Take that. But yeah, I mean, just, you know, I think that, you know, when you see what's possible, Miracles, for example, Miracles is still holding strong as the control deck of the format. You know, when you see what Legacy is already capable of, it just doesn't seem that scary. And it's nothing that Legacy players haven't seen before. They've seen Trinosphere before. They've seen Chalice from the Void. You know, they're used to it from playing Mud and things like that. And so I think that they just have more experience against it. And they're used to, like you said, they're used to sort of the style of disruption, whereas Modern really isn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, Legacy's also been facing down the Eldrazi menace since the original Rise of the Eldrazi set. Show and Tell Emrakul is no joke, especially on turn one or two.
Oh, yeah. I remember when I was at the last SCG Open in Minneapolis, or in Milwaukee, and I played a side event, and my opponent, like, mulliganed to five on game three, and I was feeling really cocky, and I was like, you know, oh, show and tell, mull to five. He probably doesn't have a very good hand. And it was literally, like, City of Traders, Island, show and tell, Emrakul, and something else. And I was like, fucking A. And so, so yeah, if that deck has what it needs, it's very scary, and so I certainly appreciate that. I've actually started building Storm in Legacy, just because I've been kind of curious about it, and so I picked up a couple pieces this weekend. I picked up a lot of the cantrips. Like, I am officially the proud owner of a set of Brainstorm and Ponder.
Yay. You're grown up now.
I know, you guys are a corrupting influence on me, but right? And then I, our little girl's growing up. And then I picked up a couple copies of Dark Ritual, Cabal Ritual. I got my copy of Tendrils of Agony. And, yeah, I should be able to put it together soon. And, I just want to try something new for a change. Like, I really respect that Storm. You know, Dredge, unfortunately, has a hard time dealing with hate. You know, and one thing I like about Ad Nauseam and Modern is that you can play a Leyline of Sanctity and I have options. You can play a Spellskite and I can do something about it. You know, I feel like the way that Dredge attacks other decks, it just doesn't fight hate very well. And a lot of the hate that people play really makes the deck fold. And so, you know, the thought of Storm and Legacy, Ad Nauseam, Tendrils being more resilient really kind of appeals to me right now, because I'm tired of just losing to certain cards where it's like, fuck, man. So so I kind of want to try something else and see if I have some better luck.
Tendrils was the first Legacy deck that I ever picked up and played, and I, like, didn't look through it at all, and I was like, let's play a game. And I just drew seven, and then I just figured out how it went as I went, and I ended up winning, and I was like, this probably is not a thing that should happen.
Yeah, I've been reading up on it, and it's just really, it's fascinating to me, because it's not clear to me that they can go off. So I remember even watching some videos from GP Seattle, and the commentator is like, you're looking at the hand, and you're like, well, I don't see it. Like, maybe he'll assemble something in three turns or whatever. And then all of a sudden, he just goes off. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at the hand, and you're like, how did those cards lead to this? Like, it's not clear to me. You know, when I'm playing in Modern, it's like, it's very obvious. You have an Angel's Grace, you have an Ad Nauseam, boom. But this, it's like, I see a Gitaxian Probe, I see a Petal, I see a Cabal Therapy, I see a land. Huh? Like, how does this lead to 16 damage? And somehow it does, and I want to get to that point where I can do that, because it looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
I remember I was judging a coverage match for an SCG Open in Minneapolis, and I told a Storm player to make his decision faster, because he'd been sitting in the tank for so long. And so he just blows his entire hand, ponders, hits exactly what he needs, and storms off from there, right, just from that comment about, you need to play faster. It was crazy. That deck has a lot of power and a lot of explosive capabilities.
See, that's what I want to hear. That's what makes me want to play it.
Do it.
You guys are just happy I'm playing blue cards. You couldn't give a shit what deck I'm actually putting them in.
It's true. You caught us.
First step, Storm. Second step, hey, Miracles has Brainstorms in it too. You're gonna catch
no,
the
no. I mean, it would give me, I mean, I would be able to follow the best Miracles player, Reed Duke. I mean, I'm just playing, but
give top a little spin.
Hey, we are ladies here. Keep that to yourself. Take your top for us. That is filth. I'm gonna write that down, but it's filth. They announced on the mothership today, they laid the new From the Vault. It's going to be called From the Vault Lore. And it says, delve deeper into the events that shaped the multiverse and show your opponents that those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. This limited edition set includes cards from throughout Magic's history that are renowned for both their power and the stories behind them. Surprise your foes with blasts from the past that you'll have to see to believe. I wonder what, do you guys have any thoughts as to what you're expecting to see here? Like old school cards that could make the cut?
I was hoping for Nicol Bolas again.
Yeah?
Yeah, I love Nicol Bolas, and I never was able to get a hold of the From the Vault Dragons version. And I'd be happy with either the original Elder Dragon Nicol Bolas or the Planeswalker, but my chat on my stream shut me down and said that he had already been printed as a promo too many times, so I'm just going to have to sit with my disappointment.
Yeah, there was a discussion happening on Twitter about like your favorite flavor text, and people were using the hashtag. And you know, when I think of lore, I immediately think of the Weatherlight set because I remember reading all of the books, and you know, that to me was some of the most vivid lore that I can recall. And so I would like to, I can't specifically say like what about that would be in this set, but I hope something tied to that storyline will be here, because I have a lot of fond memories of Karn and Squee and Tongarth and Miri and Krovax and Selenia, and just something from that should make it in here, because that would make me very happy.
I saw a lot of discussion about like them only including stuff post Jace versus pre Jace, and I was like, I don't mean, you guys are out of my realm. I don't know what's going on here.
Do you even know about life pre Jace?
Well, no, not really. I don't know anything about Magic lore. I just cast my cards and hope that something
happens. And BJ before Jace.
Weren't you the one, or was that Hallie, who didn't even notice that Den Protector had the baby on her hip?
That was Hallie.
Yeah, because you guys are just so focused on the card, you're like, oh yeah, there is a baby there. It's like, oh my god, hello. Like, there were two articles on the mothership today that I thought would be fun things to talk about. The first one was by Mark Rosewater, and he talks about his Storm Scale, which is something that got started on his Tumblr called Blogatog, where he rates mechanics from the game on a scale of 1 to 10, and basically describes how likely it is that these cards would ever come back to Standard. So, for example, level 1, things like Flying, Death Touch, Scry, we'll definitely see those again, and probably in the next set, because they're very common mechanics, and you know, they don't really cause a lot of confusion, and they're not really competing with other mechanics. You have something like level 3, which is Cycling, Flashback, Landfall, things that you will most likely see again and probably many times because they're very popular with players and with the design team. You know, and then you move into things like Madness and Retrace that are like, it's unlikely, but if we can get it right this time, sure. And then at level 10, you have the Oh Hail No, which is Storm, Dredge, and Affinity for Artifacts. Which I still believe, I'm still optimistic, I still feel that someday, you know, it's funny, is anytime I talk to my friend Allie Medwin, who's in R&D, and she does things, and I'm just like, anytime she tells me that she's working really hard on something, she'll be like, oh man, this new set is stressing me. And I'm like, oh, is it because you're bringing back Dredge? Is that why you're so exhausted? You want to get it right this time? And she's like, no. But I still believe. And so Marl was talking about the Much of Cons block and kind of talking about, you know, the mechanics that were introduced in Cons and how they ranked on his Storm scale. So we talked about things like Morph and how, you know, Morph could come back, but it still has its share of issues. And then things like Raid and Outlast and things like that. Prowess, of course, we're going to see again. You know, when you think of the mechanics of Cons of Tark here, Chris, you know, are there some that you really liked or some that you'd be happy never to see again?
I was really into Prowess. I'm happy that, you know, they basically have made it, you know, an evergreen mechanic at this point, because it just really is very cool. And it was probably my favorite mechanic from this little block. I didn't really use Morph a lot because I wasn't really playing any decks that had anything to do with it. And so it was just interesting to kind of read, you know, what he was talking about with Morph and versus Megamorph, and that Megamorph was, you know, dunsies forever, like, we're not touching that with a 10-foot pole, you know, admits that the name was like, so, you know, but that Morph came with its own set of issues. I never played anything with Outlast, really, so, you know, and that's why it's interesting, you know, to see some cards that are using it, you know, being used in, you know, the Hardened Scales deck and other things. Dash, I was pleased to see was something that, you know, will show up again, because I think it is an interesting mechanic. I would like to see how it's used in, like, other settings, other worlds, so I look forward to seeing that again. And looks like Manifest, like, sort of had its place, but it seemed like one of those mechanics that just could be very confusing to some people, so I can see why they would not want to possibly continue with Manifest. I know that I never even tried to even touch the thing, because I'm like, this is just gonna end up like a bad deal. But yeah, Dash, Prowess, those are two that I was very, very interested in, and I'm glad that they did well. And I'm also happy that one thing that upset you quite a bit, Aaron, with the whole creatures being able to exploit themselves, that, you know, they
Oh, it didn't upset me. I was just, you know, I was looking at it from, I actually really like exploit, and I like it more from the Vorthos standpoint, but I was more confused by it, and I actually found some really great discussion on it on Twitter, you know, just kind of asking from a flavor standpoint, is it possible to exploit yourself? And I actually, you know, some of the discussion that I had with people is that you can in fact exploit yourself. You know, you can also objectify yourself if you want to, and so that was something that I actually really like it as a mechanic. I was just more interested from a flavor perspective, if it didn't really occur to me that somebody could exploit themselves. Like, I really had to think about that, and then ultimately it made sense.
I really liked how a lot of these mechanics made it into standard at some point or another, or top aided. Like, I mean, exploit, raid, rebound, morph, megamorph, dash, like, they all did pretty well. Manifest, I mean, we don't need to see that match again, but, and like Chris, I also liked Prowess, but I mean, Stubborn Denial, a lot of these cards made it into standard and kind of had their time to shine, except for Outlast, I think, which he said was unpopular, so that makes sense. But yeah, overall, when I was looking through this, I don't know what I expected to happen, but I was like, wow, there's a lot of mechanics. it's like I just kind of forgot them all over time, but I really like the article and how he kind of broke it down and his scale, because I'd never thought about it before, but, you know, there are things that I don't want to see come back, and, you know, like Storm, like, I feel like they would mess it up somehow. But I thought it was a really great article overall and a good breakdown of the mechanics as we move into something new.
I really liked a quote from the Delve section.
Oh, that bitch.
Yeah. Mark Rosewater not only talked about popularity and just parts of the design, but also the development part. So Storm would be considered problematic for development, and something like Flying is easy for development. So Delve is development problematic. And the picture is just a Become Immense, and I'm like, oh man, I've had way too many Blighted Agents kill me because of that stupid card. Mm-hmm. Which, that was my favorite part. Overall, the article was kind of a blast from the past, because it feels like the cons of Tarkir Block is ages away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really enjoyed this as well, you know, as somebody whose favorite mechanics are on the level 10, you know, I'm probably not the best person to rate these mechanics, because I'm the one going, this is awesome. And it's funny, because all of the mechanics that I enjoy, like, for example, Exploit, he was like, Exploit has a bunch of issues, but we could maybe see it. So everything that I liked was sort of a, you know, don't hold your breath to hell no on the scale. So it's just like, damn, so what does that say about me? But so Exploit I actually really, really liked. I was surprised that City C Undead Vizier didn't see more play, because I thought it was, I thought it had some potential there. I was kind of sad that we didn't see more Rebound. That was a mechanic I definitely wanted to play with, and I just didn't feel like any of the cards were, you know, maybe good enough to see constructed play. I mean, maybe they were good and limited, I don't really know, but I really would have liked to have seen Rebound kind of come out more. I do like Dash. I think Dash gives aggro decks another angle rather than just sort of overcommitting and hoping someone doesn't have a board wipe. You know, it does give you a way to, you know, you're forcing your opponent to have instant speed removal, which, you know, normally they can kill you with sorceries or instants, and this is just a nice way to kind of get around that, which I thought was really cool. I thought the Delve section, I thought he was being polite. you know, like, I just kind of felt like he was dancing around some of the things where he was like, well, Delve has its fans, but it falls below average. You broke two formats with this. You, you know, we had to get rid of Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time in both Modern and Legacy. I think you're being a little kind here. And then, you know, he was like, oh, it interacts just fine with other. No, it did not. Like, you know, and, you know, just it just felt like he was kind of, you know, just trying really hard not to say we done screwed up. And Delve is easy to use. No shit. oh, and then the best part, it requires exiling, but usually isn't taxing. Young
well, yeah, you just put
man.
Your exiled cards in a pile, and then you put your deck in your hand, because you've probably won at that point.
Yeah, and then he said that got an 8 rating, so he said that we have to find the right spot to use it and solve many of its issues. Yes, you do. So hopefully we don't see Delve for a while, because like you said, it did wonders for Infect as well. You know, it gave them Become Immense, and that was a big deal for them, no pun intended. But in addition to the Storm Scale, there was also an article called The Cons Cards That Could Have Been, and this was an article by Adam Szaborski where he asked certain brewers in the community, you know, what were some cards that you had wanted to take off from Cons of Tarkir and that unfortunately didn't, or they just don't look like they're going to? And we saw things like See the Unwritten, and, you know, we saw things like, I'm trying to think what else there was here. So See the Unwritten was one of them. Sage of Hours was another card that people had brought up. No, that's actually a Theros card, I'm sorry. Empty the Pits was one. Yeah. And so there were things like that. You know, were there any cards that you guys really liked from Cons that just never really took off?
I was really ready to play a See the Unwritten deck when Ulamog was spoiled, especially since you could See the Unwritten and hit Green Warden of Murasa, which would get you back the See the Unwritten and you could just do it again. That's a lot of value, in my opinion.
I agreed with the discussion they had in there about Narset and Lightning Master, because when that card came out, I'm like, well, that's really sweet. But it's when, you know, she attacks, and it doesn't feel so good when, you know, you're flipping over a Deflecting Palm, unfortunately. But when she came out, like, I really just wanted to do all of the things with her, and it just feels like she never really found a proper home, unfortunately. And even, you know, Deflecting Palm itself, I feel like it didn't really have an amazing home in any particular decks, and I feel like the one deck I can think of, you know, is, you know, Burn, you know, in Modern, that's used it, like, in sideboards, and I use it myself, but it feels like it just never was a super heavy hitter, and it's too bad, because that card is, you know, fucking sick. One other card that was not mentioned on there, but it's, like, my bae, is Mindswipe, you know? Mm. That yeah. card is so good, and it feels so good to do, and I just feel like there's just not a right home for it. I even tried to put it in the sideboard of my Red, White, and Blurn deck, and I was like, nope, you're just not going to have the mana to do this, unfortunately, even though you really, really, really want to. So too bad Mindswipe, but maybe someday.
I also wanted Mindswipe to be a thing so badly. But I also like Crater's Claws. Like, it was kind of a fringe card. It was played just a little bit, but I had high hopes for it throughout the whole thing, and it just kind of never happened. But I also, when they first spoiled the set, I really liked Abzan Guide, the 4/4 lifelink Morpher Bro. I was just like, I don't know why, but I was like, he's on this giant, like, giraffe thing, and he's a 4/4 with lifelink. Like, that must be good, right? And then, I mean, it was sweet and limited, but It never made it to standard.
That was definitely my most drafted card in Cons of Tarkir Limited. I would play it in my Soul Tie decks. That's how so in love I was with it.
I always have high hopes for, like, the banner type cards, you know, that make mana, you know, just like the Clue Stones and all of those things, but these ones were never good enough to be in standard, so
I know someone that's using them.
Does his name start with Chris and end as Preston?
It actually doesn't, but...
Oh my god.
I don't believe in the banners, but someone out there does.
The Howl of the Horde deck that never was could have been sweet, too. You could kill somebody with Howl of the Horde Jeskai Charm, probably. All of my friends were talking about how Howl of the Horde was going to be busted in Standard when it first was spoiled.
Yeah, I agree with Empty the Pits. You know, that was another card that I saw, and, you know, when I saw how powerful Delve was with other cards, I just assumed that that was going to translate to Empty the Pits, and that didn't happen. I really would have liked to have seen Sidisi Brew Tyrant have more legs. I mean, I played Sidisi Whip, but it's like the minute Phaedros rotated, it was just done. And when Worldbreaker came out, I was kind of thinking of, like, shenanigans with that. I was like, oh, you could mill and then get a Worldbreaker and then bring the Worldbreaker back and, like, something with that, and that didn't really take off. And I just wish Sultai had more legs than it did. And same thing goes with Villainous Wealth. I had tried Villainous Wealth before rotation. It was super, super fun. You know, obviously, with there not being a lot of control in the format, it was a really good time to play that deck. And that was something that, again, when we lost Dictative Kirametra and things like that, the deck kind of went away. And, you know, I always hoped that, you know, somebody would bring it back, or that maybe there'd be some tools in Oath or Battle to work with it, and there just really wasn't. So, you know, my top three in terms of, you know, cards I wish had done more was Sidisi, Empty the Pits, and Villainous Wealth. Very sad. Although I am happy that Crackling Doom is rotating. Yay!
No.
That makes me very happy. Yeah, I'm very happy about that. You guys, you have self-inflicted wound. You'll be fine. I think you do. I'll have to check the standard thing. I could be wrong. So, do you guys have anything Magic planned this weekend? I know Chris and I will be at GP Detroit, so if anybody's listening, feel free to come say hello to us. We'll have stickers and other things of that nature. But Katie and Morgan, are you playing this weekend? Anything?
I am judging at GP Detroit.
Oh, we'll see you there then.
Yeah.
Well, I should just buy my plane ticket and come too.
We've got room. Come on down.
I think I might, I am going to make it a goal to draft this weekend. So either Friday, and by draft I mean streaming and drafting. So Friday or Sunday, I think I'm going to try and get that on the docket.
I should probably confess something to you guys, too. So when the last Streamer Showdown happened on Thursday, I had asked Lee Sharp if they were looking for people to do the showdown. And he was like, well, we're always looking for people. You know, who did you have in mind? And I was like, me and the girls. And he was like, huh? And I'm like, well, we do this group stream. I was like, you know, we hang out together and we stream. And I know that the MTA girls do their draft together. Mm-hmm. And LRR has done theirs together. And I was like, you know, could we maybe put our names in the ring to be considered for that? And he was like, sure, send an email to blah. And so I totally submitted us for consideration. So Sweet. If you guys are down,
yes,
we may be part of the Streamer Showdown. So if anyone's listening and you want to see us take on Kenji and Gabby and whoever else, let Wizards know, and hopefully they'll pick us to do it.
As long as Hallie's doing the clicking.
poor people aren't even gonna know what she looks like. They're gonna see her board state, and then they're gonna see her and be like, oh, the hat's Hallie. Like, oh, poor Hallie, we miss you. So if anybody's listening and they've enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all, and how can they get a hold of you?
I am Katie. You can find me on Twitter. That's at meanmugger, MEANMUGGER. Or you can find me by Twitch, twitch.tv/meanmuggermtg. Or you can shoot me an email at katie.neil14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at TEHKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTEHKRIZ@gmail.com. And as I said last time, my Snapchat, as Katie knows, is Cryptic Command, spelled with K's.
Morgan, do you Snapchat?
I do. I've sent Chris a couple Snapchats, actually.
Uh-oh. Mm-hmm.
She has.
She's trying to convince Hallie and I that we need to get on board with it, and we just haven't done it yet.
Do it.
It's super distracting.
Okay. And Morgan, how can people find you?
I'm on Twitter, at MTGValkyrie. That's VALKYRIE. And my YouTube channel is youtube.com/mtgvalkyriechannel. I stream under twitch.tv/mindofmyrdin, MINDOFMYRDDIN. And I put up content basically every weekday, so you can probably find something to watch.
Yeah, they certainly can. And I love what you do. And thank you so much for coming on the show. And hopefully you'll come back and see us again sometime.
Yeah, thanks again for having me.
Absolutely. And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That is OriginalOestrus. You can email me at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. We are on Twitch at twitch.tv/the GF Bracket. And you can also find us at patreon.com/thegirlfriendbracket if you would like to support the show. Update about that. Our thank you cards should be going out sometime this week. Katie, I think you said?
Yes, Watson is in the mail.
Right okay, now. So if you had stickers in the mail and cards in the mail, you'll be expecting those soon. And we're also working hard on our t-shirts for you if you're eligible for that reward as well. So just keep your eyes peeled because we've got a lot of good stuff coming. And thank you all so much for listening, as always. And we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.